Well, the three rules are actually the finalization of interim rules that have been around since March or April of last year. And all three rules have their ultimate origin in acts by Congress that were trying to adjust the procurement system. In general, the three rules don't make enormous changes in terms of the interim, final versus interim forms. So what's been going on the past almost year will continue to go on, but these rules are still fairly new, so they're worth talking about.
And so let's start with the first one about competition and the idea of cost reimbursement contracts. So they want to limit those, I guess, is kind of the administration policy.
Yeah, this is this is part of an ongoing effort to limit cost reimbursement contracts, with the perception that they are going to be more costly in the long run than fixed price contracts. And you know, there's some debate about that in policy circles. Some folks think that cost reimbursement contracts are going to be cheaper in certain types of contexts like R&D, where the risks are unknown. The rule is fairly mild in terms of its limitations on cost reimbursement contracts. The agency is going to need to document the contract file when it uses a cost reimbursement contract, whether or not there's an acquisition plan. And the test is still the same. It's either there are insufficiently defined requirements, or it's not possible to estimate costs well enough for a fixed price contract.
And in general, aren't we talking about services contracts here more so than materials and things that are that do have predictable prices?
That's probably the case. I mean, there are certainly some supply contracts that start off as cost reimbursement contracts, but they can more easily migrate to fixed price. R&D contracts are the poster child for this kind of contracting, and there was some effort to provide a blanket exemption for them so that they would be able to be used as cost reimbursement contracts without a finding, but that did not happen. So even cost R&D contracts need to be justified. The justification, by the way, which is, and this is a good thing, I think, requires that on the contractor side, the contractor have an adequate accounting system to support a cost reimbursement contract, and on the government side, that it have adequate resources to monitor and audit that contract.
We're speaking with Joseph Petrillo. He's a federal contracts attorney with Petrillo and Powell in Washington. Now, there's also an idea here of increasing contracts to women-owned businesses. And does this rule elevate them beyond the other disadvantaged small business and other set-aside categories?
No, but they're on a parity. I mean, the woman-owned small business program is now on a parity with other small business programs, such as the HUB Zone program or the 8A program. This has been a long and winding road. Congress provided authority for a woman-owned small business program in December of 2000, and it was only in April of last year that the interim regulation came out. Now it's final. This rule sets up a woman-owned small business program. It sets up a certification process and a program repository where those who are eligible for the program will be found. And it does set up two levels of set-aside. One level is for women-owned small business, and the other level is for economically disadvantaged women-owned small businesses. The difference is that to have a set-aside for women-owned small business, SBA has to find that women are substantially underrepresented in those particular industries. And for an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business, it's enough that they simply are underrepresented, not necessarily substantially underrepresented. And to find out what industries qualify, there's a place on the SBA website at sba.gov/WOSB, and you can find there a list of 375 classification codes under the North American Industry System.
That was controversial, I think, earlier. I think during the latter half of the Bush administration, they had come up with only four industries that they found women were underrepresented. And there was a lot of backtracking because some of the groups raised their cackles and said, no, there's way more than four.
Well, that's right. We're up to 375 now. And some of those are substantially underrepresented, and some of those are just plain old represented. But that's what we found. And they include some IT industries, such as software publishers, computer systems design, and some other computer-related services. So There are some opportunities growing there. Once again, you need the two or more concerned rule. You got the contracting officer has to find that there's going to be at least two offerors on a contract for that's set aside for women-owned small business. And there are some dollar thresholds as well.
And then there's also the rule of three when using task order awards. I guess I thought my thought was you always had to use three bidders, but I guess not.
No, apparently not. But things have changed now, and these are new rules for the GSA's multiple award schedule contract. Again, they were interim rules before, and they're final now. They're for supplies, services, and BPAs over the simplified acquisition threshold, and that's generally going to be $150,000. The agency has a choice. It can either post the proposed procurement in eBuy, GSA's electronic bulletin board system, or it can get three offers. Now, there are some exceptions, but those are fairly narrow. And in general, an agency to have a safe harbor is either going to post the buy in advance or get the three offers, or make a finding that it falls under one of the exceptions.
And this all happens April 2nd.
This has been in effect since March, but it's final now, and we're going to be living with it for the future. And all three of these rules actually have their origin in acts of Congress that are once again Congress tinkering with the procurement system to try and improve it.
And Mr. Petrillo, before we run, you gave us a little teaser by email this morning that there are some new thresholds under the Trade Agreements Act. What's that about?
Yeah, that's right. The general threshold for supply and service contracts has gone up to $202,000 starting April 2, and the threshold for most NAFTA purposes is $77,494. So we're dealing with some new thresholds on those. The Israeli Trade Act is a $50,000 threshold. So those are going to be new thresholds for supply and service contracts. Construction contract thresholds are much higher.